Welcome to Tone Deaf, a theater nerd's guide for their musically challenged spouse. I'm Kay, a musical theater nerd.
And I guess I'm like Warren. And I guess maybe I might be musically challenged or something like that. I mean maybe. Maybe.
Oh my gosh, I love you.
I love you.
So it is time for the penultimate Black History Month episode for February. We've gone on a long journey here, and we've just barely scratched the surface of everything that's out there. Today, we're going to cover one of the ones where you think, oh, this is a black movie musical. Like, one of the ones where, like, if you hear the, or if you're thinking of black movie musicals, this is one of the ones where you go, oh yeah, this one. Like, first one that comes to your mind if you're into black movie musicals like I am.
If you know things about
stuff. If you know things about stuff, then this is one of the first ones, because it's this one or Cabin in the Sky that people would think of. Today, we're going to cover Stormy Weather.
It's pretty sunny outside right now.
Right now it is, but it's not. Okay. So, Stormy Weather is, it comes from the title of the last song that's in the show.
Oh. Spoilers.
So, this one's gonna be another review type musical. Like, this is that period of time when the music was more important than the plot.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, I mean, and it, you know, really, if that's your goal to make a musical, that should be the most important thing is the music, because that's what people come there for.
Yeah.
So you're kind of giving me, a little bit of a Harlem is Heaven
yes,
briefing.
Yes, it'll be a little bit like a Harlem is Heaven briefing, except for that this, as we're going to talk about, actually has studio power behind it, okay. Unlike Harlem is Heaven did. So it's going to be based a little bit on the life of Bojangles, who's in this movie as well. And like we said last episode, Bojangles was a Banff.
Bojangles was Bill in Harlem.
Yeah,
Heaven,
Bill
right?
Robinson. Okay. Yeah, his stage name was Bojangles. And he isn't the only Banff in this movie. We have Cab Calloway, who wrote Minnie the Moocher, which was the first single by a black artist to sell a million copies.
Nice.
And you would have seen him perform Minnie the Moocher in the Blues Brothers movie. There's a scene in the jazz where you've got a jazz singer.
It's been a while,
yeah,
but okay.
That's Cab Calloway performing
nice.
That song. And then you've got Dooley Wilson, who is in Casablanca. He did, You Must Remember This, A Kiss Is Still a Kiss.
Oh, yep, I do know that.
A Sigh Is Just a Sigh. That one.
Hmm.
And then Fats Waller, which we'll cover him in depth when we do Ain't Misbehavin'. The Nicholas Brothers, who are a dancing duo who do flash dancing, and one of the most famous performances in this movie. These two, holy smokes, they are amazing dancers. Like, just flashy and stylistic and...
They just flash
up on
the audience?
No. And up on tables. That's not what it means. And then this will also feature one of my favorite actresses of all time ever to act and sing and just be all around an amazing person, and we're going to be revisiting her at the start of March. Lena freaking Horne. The freaking is my...
Yeah, that sound. She sounds familiar.
So, I think I've talked about her a little bit to you just off mic before.
Probably.
And so she's one that I want to do a whole episode about someday.
Okay.
Because she is a Banff.
Nice.
Like, not only is she this amazingly talented actress and singer, but she's a civil rights activist too. Like, at the same time, she was in the USO And she protested their segregationist policies. Like, one point she actually walked off the stage during a performance and came down to perform for the first row of the black audience, or the black service members, who were seated behind the German POWs that were brought in.
What?
Yes. They were seated at the very back, and so she goes,
wow.
No, not doing this. So she came down off of the stage. She was also active in the NAACP, the SNCC, which is the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and the National Council of Negro Women. She actually quit the USS or the USO to fund her own trips over to visit troops because she was just done with it. And she's like, you know what? I don't want to deal with those rules. I'm just going to pay for myself to go over and perform. And she worked with Eleanor Roosevelt with anti-lynching legislation. Just, this woman was amazing. And like I said, we're going to see her perform again in a couple of episodes at the start of March.
Cool.
So, as I said before, Stormy Weather is a very based on a true story type version of Bojangles' life. It's not super accurate. And they even, like, he has a different name in this than being Bojangles, because again, it's based on his life, but not really. And the romance in it's even completely fabricated, but that had to be Hollywood. So, speaking of, this is when you still have the studio system.
Ah, so which, basically actors don't have rights and the studio controls everything.
Yes, which kind of makes it cool, because 20th Century Fox is the one who put this one on. Lena Horne was contracted through MGM. And so 20th Century Fox was able to bring Lena Horne over to do this movie, which is pretty awesome. Now, this film is the last film for Bojangles Robinson and Fats Waller. Fats Waller died December of 1943 from pneumonia. He was only like 39.
Ooh.
And then Robinson died in 1949, which he's like 30-something years older than his love interest in this. He's in his 70s almost by the time, like, well, he's in his late 60s during this movie.
Well, it's like we watched Harlem is Heaven, and you're telling me, because, like, his love interest in that was, like, 18, and he was like, yeah, he's in his 50s right there. I'm
He doesn't look like he's in his 50s. No, he doesn't. And he doesn't look like he's in his 60s in this movie either, like.
But still, just.
We could go into a whole thing about filmmakers being kind of gross towards younger actresses and being like, oh, well, we have to put a 56-year-old man with an 18-year-old woman, but God forbid we have a 56-year-old woman and a 56-year-old man. Ugh.
That's disgusting.
Lord. Anyway, I won't go into that rant today. So the film was released July 21st, 1943, and it seems to have been pretty well received. I actually grabbed the New York Times article about its release that was in the film section at the time. So they say, 20th Century Fox gave its all-new Negro musical review, Stormy Weather, co-starring the inimitable Bill Robinson and the sultry songbird Lena Horne, a dual New York premiere yesterday at the Roxy Theater, 7th Avenue and 50th Street, and the Alhambra Theater in Harlem, 7th Avenue and 126th Street. Stormy Weather is a first-rate show, just the kind of spirited divertissement that will make you forget all about your own momentary weather troubles. There's so much to choose from, Fox having wisely decided to bury a very thin and trite storyline with an abundance of the world's show world's leading colored talent, that Stormy Weather has more the appearance of super vaudeville bill than a motion picture. Musically, too, it is a joy to the ear, especially when Miss Horne digs deep into the depths of romantic despair to put across the classic blues number after which the picture is titled, in a manner that is distinctive and refreshing even at this late day. She does very well also by I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby, There's No Two Ways About Love, and Digga Digga Do, among others. To single out each entertainer and skit for even a sentence would run this report to considerable length. In short, swell is the adjective for all 12 of the principal turns. And it goes on talking about just how freaking amazing the Nicholas brothers are, saying that the rubber-legged Nicholas brothers and their incredible acrobatic dance number leapfrogging down a flight of stairs spread eagle fashion.
Ugh.
So you'll see, pretty much, and it's so cool. Ah, the Nicholas brothers were amazing, and you'll probably hurt watching them, but...
As I do with many a talented dancer.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let's see, they go on to say, our only complaint is that nobody thought of giving Dooley Wilson a song. It's too bad, even though he does write nicely in a straight role. Fox calls Stormy Weather a cavalcade of Negro entertainment, perhaps the 25-year span which sees Bill Robinson returning from France and rising the hard way up the show ladder to an eventual Hollywood appearance in 1936, is considered in the cavalcade of fashion. But the story's scope is too narrow to be truly representative of the Negro's great contribution to the world of entertainment. Rather, the picture's held together via a long, drawn-out romance involving Mr. Robinson and Miss Horn. Under Andrew Stone's knowing direction, the film moves smoothly and is paced just right. The sets are believable, gaudiness having been ruled out by the $5,000 war set ceiling limitation under which Stormy Weather was made. Looks like 20th Century Fox has hit the musical and box office jackpot again. So, nice. This film is directed by Andrew L. Stone, with the script being written by Jerry Horwin, Seymour B. Robinson, and H.S. Kraft. This is written and directed by white people, but I still wanted to cover it because it contributed to breaking through the color barrier for black actors to get lead roles outside of race films. Race films basically being films that were for black people, written by black people, directed by black people, performed by all black casts, only for black audiences, and they were not within the studio system.
So this is positive just because the establishment was helping to move it forward.
Yes, yes. This is one of those cases where it's like, it's really important for people with more privilege to help out in these ways. And I mean, you know that it wasn't altruism on behalf of the studio.
Well, I'm sure that they saw this talented group and they're like, hey, we can make, they have, you know, yeah. The end result at the day is they wanted to make money.
Yes.
It's good that good came exactly. As a result of it, but the end result was they wanted to turn a profit. Yeah,
they wanted to turn a profit and they ended up helping usher in more ability for black people to move into lead roles in big studio performances. So it's one of those don't look a gift horse in the mouth moments.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah. No, it's especially sometimes that, especially the further you go in the past, you have to cling on to those good moments.
Yes, you absolutely do. One thing, because I would love to, I don't know how I could really work it into the scope of our show because we're musical theater, but I would love to do something about race films because there were over 500 of those made from 1915 to, let's see, what was the last year for these? 1915 to like the 1950s. But there are only 100 that still exist.
Oh, yikes. So the stuff you're talking about, these are not musicals.
These are not generally musicals, but it's part of that, the period of time where you're getting basically independent black filmmakers making these movies because they aren't welcome in the studio system. Or they can't have all black movies in the studio system because the studio system is white run and generally kind of racist. Well, not kind of. There's a really good movie that I don't know if other people see this in it, and maybe it's just me seeing it, but Cats Don't Dance actually covers this period really well. And it's one of those things that when I was a kid, I even was like, when I was watching Cats Don't Dance, like, are they meaning to make this allegorical? Because this seems pretty darn allegorical.
Yeah, yeah, I remember watching that with, yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. it hits all of the key factors pretty,
yeah, on, yeah, pretty on point. It's one of those, like, did they intend that, or, I
think that they did, honestly.
Yeah, because it's one of those, like, one of those ways that you can kind of do a little bit of a middle finger to the establishment with that one going, or a middle finger to the past going, why did you cut people out? And I don't know.
If you want to cover something that may be a little asymmetrical to what our normal stuff is, I mean, we can always do that and have it be like, you know, a mini-sode or a bonus.
We might, but yeah,
don't be discouraged to cover things that mean important things.
Why, thank you, my dear. But yeah, it's one of those things that this period of time is very interesting. And I kind of laugh at the fact that, because again, I don't know if other people saw that in that movie, but I sure did. And
it's hard not to, especially how you get, I'd hope this doesn't sound wrong, you get black vibes from the main character.
Yes. And it's one of those things where I'm like, on the one hand, for having basically the stand-in for people of color being animals, but on the other hand, it's something that a white audience wouldn't be too threatened by.
No, and unfortunately, it's true. It reminds me when we went and saw Traveling While Black, and you had that woman who was talking about, you know, people treating their dogs with more care than they did with,
yeah,
like, so it's cringe inducing only because of the lack of empathy. If you try to present it outright, you have to anthropomorphize it in order to get some people to have empathy for people in that situation.
It's like when Cecil the Lion got shot, and I was,
everybody lost, like, their damn mind,
and
about
I was
that.
Sitting here like, do I need to start walking around dressed like a lion to feel safe?
I mean, you do have this beautiful mane.
I do
mane.
Have my beautiful mane, so that's going to be cut a little bit short in celebration of the fact that I survived this, so that I wear it down all the time.
Treat yourself.
Yep, and then if some random person at work just comes up and touches my hair, it's going to be, ow!
Like you said before, your earrings are off because you're always ready to
go. I'm always ready to go. All right, so back to Stormy Weather, or rather our transition to going to watch it. I want to, again, remind you, this is in the review period of musicals.
It'll be a little rough.
It'll be, well, it's not so much rough.
Well, I don't mean rough as in, like, awkward or stuff like that. I mean rough as in, like, Harlem is Heaven was rough.
So, not quite, because the studio's behind it. It's more of the plot is thin, but that's the case with movie musicals at this time, is that the plot is thin. I want to say that Cabin in the Sky probably has a more cemented plot, but it was, like, pretty much a coin toss for which one I was going to do next. And then I was like, well, Bojangles is in this one and we just covered him, so let's see his first and his last.
That's lovely.
And then there's that. But, like I said, the music is the most important part, and the performances are. The plot is not there. I would say that maybe Harlem is Heaven had more of a... No, this will have a little bit more flesh... Or not fleshed out, but a little bit better, in quotes, of a plot, because the studio was behind it, so they had more time to flesh it out, whereas Harlem is Heaven was done in a week.
Yeah, and the editing was done in a day.
Which I sit there and I go, that's still pretty impressive for Harlem is Heaven.
You know, it was done in a week because they filmed in 2 days and then they spent the rest of the time editing the film.
Well, no, it literally was filmed over a week, but editing took longer, so two weeks. but again, like, this movie had a bigger budget, more time put into it, and a studio. So.
More manpower behind it.
Yeah, but if anything, really, it's... because of this studio or this time with movie musicals, Harlem is Heaven is kind of indicative, and it's kind of like you have your independent filmmaker who's influenced by stuff or influenced by reviews wanting to put a review to film. And then with this one, it's a studio that's been churning out movie review or musical reviews constantly. So they just are like, okay, do the same thing with this. Put in a thin little plot and put in amazing music.
Mm.
Now I'm going to go smoke my cigar
yep.
and count all my money. Yeah. I'm a wasp.
Nobody knows what you're laughing at, Kay. I surely did not do anything. You guys see what I have to work with here? Like,
Lord, so shall we go and watch Stormy Weather?
I'll get my umbrella.
Hey, Warren.
Hey, Kay.
Do you know what time it is?
Is it time to thank our favorite people in the whole world?
Heck yeah! Today, we would like to thank our stage crew sponsor, Jasmine Wu,
and our producer circle sponsors, Bianucci, Reagan, and Taylor Brandt.
Thank you all so much for your support of our show.
We truly appreciate it.
Today, I want to highlight a podcast that I have been binging for the last couple of weeks called Book of Lies. These two girls, Sunny and Brandy, are amazingly funny. They cover scammers, they cover liars, they cover cheats, all the sorts of deplorable folks in society, and they just break down the history, and they present it in such a fun way that my grin from ear to ear. I just love listening to this show so much. I have cracked up laughing out loud at work listening to them. I highly recommend that you check out Book of Lies on your favorite podcatcher. And now, the lights are going down and the music's starting back up, so let's head back to the second act of our show. All right, babe, so what did you think?
Stormy weather brings us both together, watching musical theater. I'm sorry to the listening audience. It was good, though. It was really good.
Wasn't it?
I shouldn't say I was surprised, like, because even though it was rough, I really liked Harlem is Heaven.
Yeah.
And I had reasonable expectations going mm-hmm. into it. Didn't feel disappointed at all.
Awesome.
Even though the story is kind of one of the weaker elements to it,
mm-hmm.
I thought the story was fine. Like, awesome. You know, really. It was very safe mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, but yeah. that was actually oddly refreshing because
after the rest of this month, you need safe.
Yeah. I need my safe space right now. Especially my fragile, fragile heart. Can't take much more. And this was a good...
Welcome to being black.
There's jokes I want to make that I can't, so thanks, Kay. Okay, well, this less than stormy show opens up with a sunny rang-tang-tang day, because that, yeah, I think I ruined that opening a bit, with a sunny rang-tang-tang day and a flurry of dancing feet. Bill Bojangles Robinson receives a booklet mentioning how awesome he is and the others in the 15th Infantry Band. So you'll have to help me with that thing, because in the beginning it opens up with Bill on the porch of his house, just going, rank-tang-tang, rank-tang-tang.
With like, the cutest children ever.
He's just got this horde of children around him.
It's like they went around and went, we need the cutest children to be in this movie. Like, you know, we need the cutest little black kids. Yes, this one here, and this one here.
The kids were really stinking adorable. Because it just shows up, like I said, Bill's on his porch, and he's tap dancing, and he's basically teaching all these kids how to do the dance. And he's going, rang tang tang, rang tang tang, rang tang tang. And he does it. It's really cute. You had mentioned it, that Bill Robinson's smile.
Yes.
He is like always...
That is the most infectious smile in the world.
I found myself, anytime he smiled, I found myself smiling because he was smiling. Because he just had, he very much, even when things weren't going his way, he very much had this like loosey-goosey attitude of like, it's okay, baby, everything's going to work out. Mm-hmm. You know, like you couldn't really keep the man down because his feet were going to lift him up off the ground, you know. Mm-hmm. And but I wanted to ask you, because as it's opening, there's this adorable little black girl opening up Bill's mailbox and pulling out like this big huge magazine booklet thing and brings it over to him, and he's like, oh, gather around, kids, and he sits down and they're all around him, and he's opening it up and he's reading it. What was that booklet? Because it seemed like it had his name in it, because it was talking about him.
I'm trying to remember what it was, because it was basically like, it was either a who's who type thing, or it was a like an entertainment mag. I'm not sure exactly what type it was, but it was like it was a magazine and they were covering him in it.
Because it mentions him and it talks about him and the other band members who were in the 15th Infantry Band.
Yeah. And then, basically going like, oh, here is the most celebrated black artist, and here's his rise and so on and so forth. And
okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Because unfortunately, just the way that I am with my terrible memory, but also trying to catalog what's going on and pay attention, and you know how well I am with multitasking. So, but that
I love though that she drops the rest of his mail and no one cares.
I totally missed that. I just remember seeing her open up the mailbox, pulling out this big old thick stack of mail. And then basically seeing the magazine and rushing over him to be like, what's this, Uncle Bill?
Yeah, the rest of the mail just falls.
And they talk about it later, but none of the kids in this are Bill's. They are all just neighbor kids. Mm-hmm. So he's like the neighborhood not creepy uncle.
Yeah.
And he is great because like all the kids just love him. And it was just really, really adorable. I genuinely want to believe that Bojangles was that nice of a guy in real life.
From everything that I was reading, it seems like he was.
Good.
At least, like, that's what it sounds like. I don't know. I haven't, like, done a huge dive into things yet because...
you haven't excavated his skeleton to look for dirt?
I have not because, you know, by the end of this month, I've just been... I'm not joking. You're getting a Kahoot quiz next episode.
Oh... Well, the fact that it's multiple choice means that I have the potential for success.
You have a 25% chance of getting an answer right each question. So
we'll
see.
Well, yeah. It depends on how you phrased your questions, because some of them I may automatically know are not going to be, you know, the right answer, and then I'll have a 50% chance. Maybe. Anyway. Anyway. So the conversation about the magazine and the... 15th Infantry Band is what sparks the trip down memory lane, so to speak, as Bill starts regaling this adorable pack of chillins about his life story. And his story begins with coming back from World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And were they in New York? I don't know where they were.
I believe so.
Was it New York?
Yeah.
Okay. Because they were somewhere. They were in some big city, and celebrations were going on, parades, everybody was super happy and excited that the war was over and soldiers were back and all that stuff. And the boys are coming back to the good old US of A for some R&R and maybe a little TLC too. Bill is checking out the scene because they go to this, they basically are like in a limousine and they get taken to this club.
I almost made a joke that would have gone right over your head when you said TLC, so continue.
Oh, well, we gotta hear this. Is it appropriate?
It was just gonna reference the band from...
There's a band called TLC?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, after the show, I'm gonna introduce you to TLC.
does it stand for Tender Loving Care?
Don't go chasing waterfalls. Just stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to.
That's TLC. Oh.
Yeah, okay. TLC.
I'm familiar with that song.
Continue.
Bill is checking out the scene at the dance club, and he sees Selena Rogers, played by Lena Horne, who I did not know how much I would like her.
Mm-hmm.
I like her very much.
Mm-hmm.
Bill takes a vicious headshot from one of Cupid's arrows and falls victim to Selena's charm. Gabe, on the other hand, his military buddy who's with him, instead of trying to woo a woman with chivalry and respect, he's opting for the gold digger approach. Cynthinetta? How was her name? Do you like that? Cynthinetta.
Uh-huh. That was her name.
Her name, this sounds like what a cyborg would think a human name should be. Hello, I am Cynthinetta.
Oh, Lord, that's actually like some of the common names that you would have had at this time period, like really? Georgetta, Cynthinetta.
Because it's almost like they tried to do Cynthia and then just put...
Yeah, I mean, it was a name that...
I've never heard of Cynthinetta.
It's okay.
Like, anyway, that's neither here nor there. Cynthinetta is apparently only impressed by a man with money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I ain't gonna say that she's a gold digger.
You read my mind!
Oh, wait, is she carrying around a shovel in that bag? Never mind. One of the things that I love about you, Kay, is that we've been together so long that I know the jokes that you want to make, but we're trying to be good.
Oh, man.
And so I'm basically psychically feeding off of what I know you want to say and what you want to joke about, because it's the same things I want to say and I want to joke about.
Oh, gosh.
Anyways, after we meet the gold digger... Bill and Gabe are sitting down at a table, chilling when Lena Selena is called on stage to dazzle the crowd with her magnificent, melodious, marvelous voice. I don't blame Bill for looking for the look on his face. I'm lucky my wife also likes Selena Lena.
Mm-hmm.
It alternates between Lena Selena and Selena Lena because that's me in names. And I didn't mention it in my note because I think I missed it initially, and then it clicked later. Selena is the sister of a squad member that Gabe and Bill both had.
Yes.
And so they knew of her, but they didn't know her.
Yes.
And apparently her brother sent letters back talking about these two, and so she wanted to meet them, and that's why they met.
Yes.
Okay, and what's funny is that is like... the same plot as White Christmas.
Yes, it is, but this is better.
And came before.
Yes.
So White Christmas, again, is ripping off. Okay, anyway.
I mean, that's kind of the case. What happens to a black...
But that's...
stuff gets stolen.
That's what I was trying to not mention. We're past that point. This is happy. This is joyous. Even though it's stormy weather.
And even though it's still at a stormy time.
And you know it is? And they did a remarkably good job of not... And it was weird because I kept expecting there to be some racist situation. But they really... It was... This portrayed the way that I feel like society should have been.
Mm-hmm.
To where there was never any kind of like... anything negative going on in terms of race. It was just people living their lives and trying to make it in an entertainment business.
Yeah.
And there was no...
It definitely is a bit of a fantasy there. Because...
Yeah, it really is.
I don't know if that's because of the Hays Code, that everything had to be sunny and happy and no mention of racism, or what.
If we don't talk about it, then it doesn't exist.
Exactly. And so it's one of those things where... In a perfect society, you wouldn't have to worry about it, but we haven't gotten over those scars yet, and so it makes it...
Well, I don't know how you can when people keep poking them and reopening them.
Yeah, and doing terrible things to black people and other people of color and to gay people and to trans people, and it's like, the scars are still gonna be there because y'all keep reopening
It's like discrimination doesn't stop, it just changes forms.
Yeah,
and
so...
victims, but okay, sorry, right. I brought down the mood.
No,
I apologize.
Worries, dear.
Okay, so we covered how Selena Lena knows Bill and Gabe.
Yes.
And that she doesn't really know them. The love triangle of this story has become apparent as Bill is joined by, what was his name, Bailey? Chick Bailey.
Chick Bailey.
Chick Bailey, who both of them have eyes on Selena Lena, who comes off stage to the accolades of the crowd and her new friends at the table. Everyone gushes over her and her performance, and Chick tells the waiter to bring more bubbly and that the party is on him. I'm going to always mess up her name. It's a good thing she's only in this opening part.
Yeah, she's only in this scene and you never see her again because that's how Gabe rolls.
Cynthanetta stares daggers at Chick only because she didn't realize that Chick is the actual rich one and she's wasting her gold digger shovel time on the empty mine that is Gabe. So there's a part where, like, Gabe is telling her that he knows Chick Bailey, the owner of this club, and he's the one who actually got Chick his start and all this
yes.
stuff. So she thinks, oh, you're more important than mm-hmm. the guy who owns the place. And so when Chick, like, is making the rounds or whatever and he doesn't acknowledge Gabe other than a, like, passing glance,
mm-hmm.
Cynthanetta is like, how dare he not
yeah
not acknowledge how much you've helped him, the ungrateful, blah 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 blah. And Gabe's like, oh, I'm so glad I picked the dumb girls, like,
yep.
They're so much easier to dupe. All they care about is money. But
one of my favorite things that comes up in this movie a couple of times is things being $3.
Yeah. So when they're at the club and Cynthanetta...
Cynthanetta.
Cynthanetta is walking around with Gabe and Gabe's like, money ain't no thing. Da, 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 da. And there's a woman who's selling...
Gardenias.
Gardenias, thank you. And... she's like, 25 cents? And he's like, yeah, I'll buy one because money ain't no thing. And Cynthanetta's like, yeah, he's rich. I'll take all of them. And then, like, the minute prior, Gabe was like, I've got $4.20 or whatever
yeah.
to my name. And the total for all of the gardenias is $3.
Yep.
And then later on, that $3 plays in again. I think it does it. Does it do it two or three times?
Twice.
Just twice, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But how many times that something happens and it's $3. Man, I wonder how much that was in 19... whatever. anyway, sorry.
No worries,
I am all sorts of getting distracted. Selena is sad to hear that Bill won't be staying around long, because now that he's back from war, he's got his old job waiting for him in Memphis, Tennessee. Selena is very sad, because she thinks Bill is a great dancer who should pursue his fancy feet career. Chick is not so subtle about his desire for Bill to take his fancy feet back to Memphis, so he and Selena can get better acquainted in a more private setting. Chick is not cool, nice, or subtle about
yeah.
his intentions. He's
no, he isn't.
We come to find that he's a very controlling individual.
Mm-hmm.
The next show number starts up, and it's a flower-themed cakewalk on a stage that looks like a cake. So
yep.
it's a cakewalk on a cake with no small amount of panty flashing on part of our dancing flower girls as
yep.
they're, like, going around. They're just whipping their dresses back and forth, and
yeah.
some of them had it up really high, almost like covering their faces as they're whipping it around, and
mm-hmm.
it was like they're coming on stage like, look at our underwear. And I was like, well, I mean, sex sells, and I was like, that's actually kind of, I felt like that was pretty risque for the time frame, especially with the Hays Code.
Mm-hmm.
So that bit actually surprised me quite a bit. But
man, the whole time while we're watching the cakewalk, I'm just like, we need to bring those back. I would dance at a cakewalk.
No, you wouldn't, because your knees would not.
I would attempt to dance at a cakewalk.
you would excitedly be in the crowd watching the cakewalk. As this show has, as I will mention many times over the course of this show, I felt like my knees were exploding just from watching. So anyway, after the flower girl panty flashing, the lead conductor, Lieutenant Europe, tells the crowd, everyone join in. And Bill and Lena Selena join the cakewalk. Lena Selena again gives Bill the heavy, heavy implication that she likes him and wants him to stay. But Bill is dead set on going back to Memphis. Bill seemed like, considering how he took a critical hit from Cupid's arrow, like, earlier, and you could just see it in his face, like, it was one of those, like, love-at-first-sight types of things, yeah. Even though I don't believe in that. He was very resistant to the idea of staying, even to, like, be around her. Like,
I think just because he had realism going through his mind, like, no, I can't do it. I can't afford to live here in New York. I need to...
Well, maybe.
Go back. No, I need to go...
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Mm-hmm. I guess that's fair. It's just... I feel like if I was in his situation, I'd just come back from war, and then I immediately met a girl who was obviously very interested in me. I'd have been like, oh, well, I survived the horrors of war. Now yeah. It's time to have a good time, I guess.
They also needed a way to bring the plot to where it goes.
Fair point. The plot demands that Bill not stay in New York. Anyway. So after the cakewalk dance number, we cut to Bill and Gabe winding down for sleepy time on the boat that they're taking downriver to Memphis. And that part confused me a little bit as to, like, where they docked, because they were on a riverboat heading for Memphis, Tennessee. And I'm like, is Memphis on a river? And I'm saying, but maybe they were just taking, maybe it was just one more stop on their journey. I don't know. I need to look at a map to, like, plot this out and see how it goes.
The stormy weather deep lore.
Yeah, stormy weather deep lore. But anyway, they're on a boat. So that we're just going to leave it there. Bill and Gabe are on a boat. Oh, no, Kay. Don't you, Kay, no. No, Kay. No. I see. Wow, the roles are reversed. I see that look on your face. Anyway, they're winding down to go to sleep, and the two nod off, as that is, until Bill hears a wondrous sound, the musical talents of complete strangers. Bill is drawn to the talented group and seizes the moment to show off his educated feat to his new friends. Everyone, including me, is impressed with Bill. They then tell him that he should go dance at a club on Beale Street?
Yeah.
Beale Street. And Bill's just like, hey, you read my mind. And the dancey scene continues with Bill as a dancing waiter at some club we assume to be on Beale Street. Ada Brown is the second woman of the show with an amazing voice that we see.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems to be the owner of this club.
Yeah.
And so she has a nice song, but the moment is short-lived as one of the hosts runs on to tell Ada that some big producer-type person is coming to the club. Ada is like, woo, let's give him a show, and tells the ugly musicians to get to the back and the handsome musicians to sit up front. Ada then tells waiter Bill to push those tables together for their new guests, and Bill is sad that they don't want him to dance. Like, that was the thing, is she's just whirlwind. She's like, oh boy, they're coming, they're gonna watch us, da 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 da, this might be our big break. She's, you know, which one of you is the handsome one? Me. Okay, you get up front. Oh, you get in the back. And then she's like, Bill. He's like, yeah, go push those tables together. He's like, oh
yeah,
but my feet wanna dance. Bill finishes pushing tables together and lamenting about his ill-fated career path as the fancy special crowd comes in. Turns out it's Chick and Lena Selena plus their entourage. We get an awesome jazzy scene with the band and Bill getting accidentally snubbed by Lena Selena, who doesn't recognize him right away.
And Fats Waller is singing Ain't Misbehavin'.
Yes, what Kay said. The band concludes their awesome performance and Ada sits down to talk with Chick. Chick is like, I'm taking you and your band, and I'm putting you in my show, and there ain't nothing you can do about it. Ada is sad, depressed, grief-stricken, really, not really, and announces that she's closing up shop as of Saturday and that Bill is fired. Bill is surprisingly chill about the whole situation, as I mentioned earlier, like, when bad things happen, he's just like, meh, I'll figure it out. Like, nothing gets Bill down. And he just kind of laughs the whole thing off. It's at this moment that Lena Selena realizes that is that you, Bill? Bill Williamson? Sure is. and he's working in this joint as a dancer, except that the bartender is sick, so the cook is the bartender, and the waiter is the cook, and the dancer, Bill, became Waiter Bill.
Yep.
I kind of butchered that a little bit, but that is the chain reaction of events that happens when one person is sick.
Mm-hmm.
At a small club.
Yep.
In Memphis, Tennessee.
Yep.
In whatever time this is. Lena Selena is being a little flirty with Bill, and Slick Chick isn't having any of that. He tells Bill to bring him another pack of smokes, and Bill, being the good waiter that he is right on it. After Bill leaves to fetch Chick his health sticks, Lena Selena begs Chick to put Bill in the show. After all, Bill knew her brother during the war, and Bill is a good dancer, and she wants to help him out. Chick agrees, because he still wants to have that private show with Lena Selena.
Mm-hmm.
Chick tells Bill that he's going to put him right on top in the show. Little did Bill know how literal that was. We cut to Bill, who is in costume as a tribal drummer of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best way to describe him. And he beats his drum and is utterly out of the limelight of showing off his fancy feet. Because, like, they're on the stage, they have, like, this big fake tree.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, four or five different drummers who are sitting on the branches of the tree, and Bill is on the very tippity top. So he's, like,
yep,
up high away from, like, the dancers and the singers. So, Chick is definitely threatened by Bill.
Yeah.
And so he's doing the very best he can to, like, tuck him away in a corner so nobody sees him, so that he can't achieve, you know? And then we get a Digga Digga Doo Digga Doo Doo song with Lena Selena before she rushes off stage and lets the zebra girls,
yes,
dance around.
Yes, that is what they are. In the sexiest zebra costumes.
That's next on Spirit Halloween's Halloween
list.
Yeah, there you go. It's one of those, like, is this a prostitute costume? I'm a zebra. Clackety clack. The zebra girls dance around a masked man who is chasing a woman, and they both flail about in a awkward but interesting spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that was supposed to be. I'm just going to chalk it up to creative performance, because there didn't
seem... Creative performance, mild racism. not knowing... Because it was supposed to be, like, an African tribal thing, but it also was very much not.
Yeah, exactly. It was
mild racism.
Yeah. Bill finds Lena Selena after the show and is like, hey, let's go do that dinner thing that people do when they're courting. And Lena Selena is like, oh, heck yeah, let's go get a sando. Chick, on the other hand, they're going to go crush some sandos. Chick, on the other hand, is having none of it, and he swoops in like the rooster in the hen house to belittle Lena Selena for wanting to go eat poor people food with poor Bill and his poor money, as Lena Selena eating poor people food with common men like Bill will look bad on the show. Lena Selena is like, you don't own me, and Chick is like, I mean, no, but I can sure do my best to control all of your actions and be the only man in your life. Lena Selena goes into her dressing room in an understandable huff, and Bill trails Rooster Chick to be like, dude, you're wasting your time and my talent. Let me dance. Chick belittles Bill's dancing ability, and Bill is like, I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill indeed shows both us and Chick as the next number starts. It is a very cool drum number with these huge drums that are just all around the stage,
mm-hmm,
and a dozen or more men playing them. Chick is singing on stage, and Bill is tucked off to the corner drumming on one of the drums. Bill decides that this is his big moment, and he hops, mm-hmm, on top of the drum to do his tappity-tappity-tap dance all the way to... This is his big moment! And Bill hops onto the drum to tappity-tappity-tap his way into unemployment. Bill gives a powerful performance, and Chick thinks the crowd is just loving him. But once he realizes it's Bill that everyone loves, he fires him. Mm-hmm. And this was actually one of my favorite scenes, because you have these drums that are all over the stage. Some are more lower onto the ground. Others are taller than people.
Yeah.
So, like, there's people on steps behind them to, like, drum. And because of the difference in levels, Bill is jumping from these different drums and just going all over the stage, and he's tapping on these drums. But because of the way his shoes and his tap dancing is, it sounds like drum beats. It doesn't sound like tap dancing.
Yes.
So it goes really well with that scene,
mm-hmm.
and it sounded really, really good, and he was doing a really remarkable job. And there's a great part in that where, like, it cuts to Lena Selena and the others from the club in Memphis, like, looking from the side, and they're like, oh my gosh, the crowd is loving this. And then they're kind of mocking Chick. They're like, look at Chick, he thinks that they're loving him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the scene is kind of over, and Chick goes off stage, and he's like, I've never gotten a response like that before. And then comes back on, is like doing a bow, and nobody's clapping. And then Bill behind him bows, and everyone starts clapping. Yeah. And then Chick turns around, and he's like, son of a... And he's not happy. Happy that Bill just showed him up.
And again, for everyone, this is Bill Robinson's last role. So he's in his 60s, dancing on these drums.
Dude, I am half his age, and I couldn't do that now.
Like, no.
That man...
nope.
Man, very impressive. Bill goes to Lena Selena's dressing room to give her the bad news with a happy smile, as is standard mm-hmm. Bill. Like, he's funny. He comes right... He, like, knocks, and he comes in the dressing room. Well, he fired me. Big old smile on his face.
Yep.
To Lena Selena, who is not at all surprised. She asks Bill if that poor people dinner was still on the table, and Bill is like, oh yes it is, let's go do that eating thing that dating couples do. And as the two of them are getting ready to leave, Chick, the word that rhymes with stick, comes in and is unhappy to see the two of them together. Chick gets in Bill's face and is like, didn't I tell you to leave? Bill is like, I'll leave when I'm good and ready. You're ready now, Chick replies. Sure I am. And then Bill pops Chick in the face. Good going, Bill. Violence is often the quickest and most efficient short-term solution to most of life's problems. My favorite line, at least one of my favorite lines in the show. Bill comes into the dressing room and he's like, well, he fired me. And she's like, of course he did. And she's like putting on makeup, you know, she's still getting ready. And what was it he says? Bill's like, I feel like hanging a sign on that guy. On one of that guy's eyes that says closed, what was it, closed for winter or something like that?
Just closed for business.
Yeah, closed for business, just implying he wants to punch him in the face and swell his eyes shut. And as he says that, and he says, the only thing that's stopping me is I know it'll make things hard for you, saying mm-hmm. that to Selena. And she's like, don't stop on my account kind of thing. So I think that's why he punches him, you know, mm-hmm. just lays...
He got permission from his lady.
He got permission, and he lays Chick out with one blow, and then the two of them, Bill and Lena Selena, step over Chick's body and leave the scene. What's the guy, Fatty?
Fats Waller.
He then, like, pokes his head in, and then he has a quip, and I don't remember what it was.
I don't remember the quip either.
It was something like, well, I do say. Like, it was just, it was a line like that.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it was a throwaway line. I'm sure it was supposed to be funny, but I kind of was just like, meh. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we cut back to the present, and Bill is talking to the cute chillins and showing them off with his Bill Williams step. The kids are asking about Gabe and if he was still up to his gold digger ways. Bill is like, well, yes and no. And the scene goes to Harlem in New York, where Gabe is shining shoes. Gabe and Bill start to talk and talk. Gabe and Bill start to talk, and Bill tells Gabe how he's got a show going on, but he's behind on money to pay the performers, and they're getting upset about it, as unpaid workers are prone to do. Gabe tells Bill that he knows how to manipulate women, and he'll be his new agent. Gabe the Angel will come to the rescue. We cut, because Bill, like, he sit down to get his shoes shined, and Gabe's like, this one's on the house, da-da-da-da-da. And he's like, I've heard you got this show going on. He's like, yep, I do, but I need, like, $560. And he's like, but don't you have that money? He's like, yeah, but it's tied up in, like, rental and the costumes and stuff like that. And he's basically saying, I don't have money until we get ticket sales from our first performance.
Yeah.
But I need to pay people. And that's when Gabe is like, well, I'm good at manipulating women and getting them to do what I want, because I'm a kind of a sleazy sleazebag a bit. And so he's like, just tell him that you got a new manager and he's going to come take care of it.
Yeah.
And so we cut to... Wait. Yeah, so we cut to the rehearsal, and the ladies are yelling at Bill about their lack of pay. Bill tells them that all will be well, and that Gabe the Angel is on the way. Gabe shows up in a tuxedo, top hat, and smoking a cigar. And he was like in... It wasn't a limo, but it was a fancy car.
Yeah, it was a nice car.
It was a nice car. Like, he was driven there. He didn't drive himself, just to add to the whole, I'm a rich businessman type of thing. And he successfully deceives the ladies into believing that he has the money to pay them, but he wants to see them give him a sample of what he's investing in, meaning their
performance.
Yeah, their theatrical skills. Mary E. Johnson sings one of my new favorite songs for
May E. Johnson.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I wrote it as May E. and then I read it incorrectly. May E. Johnson sings one of my new favorite songs for entirely ironic reasons. I left my sugar in Salt Lake City, and the line opens up with her going, Salt Lake City, it still haunts me. And as soon as she did that, I just started laughing, and I was like, okay, I need you to dig a little bit in on this. And it just made me laugh, because I guess the whole song that she was singing, you maybe understand it better than I do, but it sounded like she was saying she was in Salt Lake City with her sweetie, and he met someone else in Salt Lake City and left her. Yeah. And it just made me laugh, because I never would have thought I would have heard any song about Salt Lake City. So that just tickled me to no end. It's okay, May. I live there. I live in Salt Lake City, and it haunts me too sometimes. After May's song, we see a man with, like, rubber legs do a dance that makes my knees explode just to watch. He was not, like, they don't ever say his name. He was just a featured extra, basically.
Yeah.
A featured dancing extra. Anyways, Lena Salinas shows up to almost blow the entire shady operation by reminiscing with Gabe about the good old days.
She almost spilled those sneaky beans.
She almost spilled the sneaky beans. She did. She was reminiscing with Gabe about the good old days when he would pretend to be rich and important, and how silly it was, because he's a nobody who swindles everybody. Bill is able to pull Lena Salinas away before she completely blows their plan, but not before the seeds of doubt are sowed into the minds of some of the performers. There's two guys kind of hanging in the back who are looking at Gabe, and then after Selena comes over and is like, Gabe, oh, look at you. You're wearing a tuxedo. Isn't that cute? You're like, she's a little patronizing to him.
Yes.
But for good reason, because he's obviously a shady individual, you know? And
like, she's doing like, oh, remember when we met and you were driving that, or you had that limo come in that wasn't yours, and
yeah, exactly.
Remember how...
Basically, she was ticking all the boxes of what he had just done,
yes.
You know, to make the other people think he was important, and so he's just trying to be like, yeah, Bill keeps trying to be like, Selena, hey, come over here, hey, Selena,
Let me tell you something.
Yo, over here, and she's like, oh, I want to catch up with Gabe, and they're finally able to get her away from him, but the two men who were hanging in the background kind of watching, and they just kind of look, and they're like, he looks familiar, talking about Gabe, and they're like, yeah, the face is familiar, but I can't recall the settings that I saw it in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the two men, who turn out to be minstrel performers, are scratching their heads as they put on their black faces and get ready for their bit, which, to be fair, was freaking hilarious.
To be fair.
Like, I don't ever want to encourage minstrel shows, because the portraying of, you know, black people as just being dumb and all that stuff is definitely a hurtful stereotype. But I feel like that skit could have been, you could have taken the black out of that skit.
You could have taken the black face away.
Yeah, and it still would have been funny.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you could do that skit with just anybody, and it was funny. Mm-hmm. Because they had this great thing where, like, one of them, they would begin to speak a sentence, and then the other one would finish it, but with a conclusion of their own, so it would be like, you know, the other day I was going to, oh, that place is great. You know, Wherever I go there, I like to, oh, I can't eat that. It gives me gas. You know, like, that's how they were finishing each other's sentences. And it was all revolving around a car that had broken down.
Yes.
And it was, I love that bit. And I hate,
and the car is just, like, exploding.
As they're talking about what they need to do to fix the car, like, more parts are falling off, and then it ends with the car just exploding, basically. Mm-hmm. And I hate that I liked that part because it was a minstrel part, but I can't help the fact that I liked it.
Well, because it was funny. Okay. And it was, it actually was a really funny sketch.
As long as you're okay with me liking it.
I thought it was hilarious. I didn't like the fact that they had to do it in blackface, but again, you've got to think of the time period that this is taking place in, and that's the only way that black actors could have performed some of these shows for white audiences, and that's what they're kind of trying to do. And there's just sort of your, if you're in the know, then you know where the undertone is, but if you're not in the know, then it's just a funny scene. And so it's one of those things that they were able to skirt the code a little bit there.
Yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
After they do their skit,
and I want to say it was Amos and Andy that they were referencing.
Like, see, and I know nothing about Amos and Andy, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, you were saying that it was Amos and Andy like. But yeah, it was funny. But after they do their skit and are heading back to their dressing rooms, they realize where they know Gabe from and break the news to the girls that Gabe ain't a rich producer. He's a shoe shiner. He has a shoe shining block in Harlem. The girls get very angry and storm off to tell the other girls that Gabe is a phony. Gabe, oblivious of his impending doom, goes to the girls' dressing room and they have a surprise for him, a severe beating. Bill and Lena Selena show up to be like, this is bad. And the girls say that they won't go perform unless they get their back pay. Cousin Jake, who I think just barely gets introduced in this scene.
He was introduced before that because Gabe had sent him to go buy chocolates and said, whatever $3 will buy.
Yeah, for the chocolates. And he's going to get chocolates for the girls. And that's what he's taking back to the dressing room. And he's like, I've got a surprise for you, meaning the chocolates. And the girls are like, we got a surprise for you, meaning a beating. Mm-hmm. But prior to that scene, do we ever see Cousin Jake anywhere else? Okay. So Cousin Jake gets introduced just in this scene. And he's also the hero who saves the day and offers to pay the girls all of their back pay so that they can go perform. It's implied that he cheated at horse racing. But hey, if it helps the plot and advances the scene, good job, Jake. Cousin Jake, cheating at horse racing is a victimless crime. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, because like, Jake comes in, he's got that wad of cash, and he's like, oh, I can take care of this, you know?
Yeah.
And Gabe's like, oh, Jake, Cousin Jake, where did you get that money? He's like, oh, I drove my boss to the track, you know, earlier.
To Belmont.
And Gabe is like, that horse that came in just right, on just the right track, like,
At just the right time
kind of thing. And I wish I could remember it better, but that's the implication, is that Cousin Jake somehow found a way to, oh, and just the right odds.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he found a way to have the horse with the worst odds come in first so that he got a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And he's able to save the day. So yay, everybody got their back pay. The show goes on as normal, and the night was a big success. We cut back to the present as Bill is talking to the Chillins, who ask him when he went to Hollywood and if Lena Selena went with him. Bill gives the sad news that he and Lena Selena ended up breaking up because she did not want to settle down and she wanted to travel and continue performing because singing is in her blood. and the breakup is handled in a very adult way, full of mutual respect, and it is very sad, because, yeah, it's just sad, but knowing that this never actually happened to Bill in real life takes some of the sting out of it.
Yes.
Because this is the one you were saying that the...
In fact, he had been married 3 times.
Oh, really?
Yes.
the scene, because Bill is showing Selena this picture of a house, like, it's actually mm-hmm. more like an artist rendition.
Yeah.
And he's like, and that'll be the nursery, and that'll be your room, and da-da-da-da-da, and she's like, oh, it's a beautiful house, but not for us. And he's like, well, why? She's like, well, you know, we're always traveling, you know, we can't live in a house like that, we're always mm-hmm. on the road. And he's like, well, I'll be working in Hollywood, I'll make plenty of money, like, you can, you know, and you've been performing for a long time, you can settle down and we can have a family. And she's like, that's not for me. Like, she's like, I wouldn't be happy if I wasn't performing. Just yes. like you wouldn't be happy if you weren't performing. And mm-hmm. I will say that I did like that for the time that this was set, they had a woman who was, she didn't want to just be a homemaker.
Yes.
She was like, no, I'm a singer. I love to sing. I mm-hmm. love to perform. It's in my blood. I want to keep doing that.
And it wasn't shown in a negative light.
No, they, like I said, they had a very mutual respect for one another. Because, mm-hmm. like, it, you know, she's basically getting ready to go change, and she's going behind her changing screen. And they're both just like, you know, I'm sorry that it's that way, too. But they're just like, you know, my art is very important to me.
Yes. Kind of thing.
So she chose her career over Bill, which...
Not going to falter.
It is what it is, yeah. you know.
And that is the same house that he has been sitting in front of.
It is.
With the kids.
And then it cuts back to... because then it cuts back to Bill sitting in that same house that was in the picture he was showing Selena, and all the kids hanging around him. And then who pulls up but Cab Calloway shows up to... Cab Calloway shows up, much to the chillin's excitement, and he sits down to talk with Bill. What's that... Do you remember that song he does at the beginning?
Oh, the... Heidi, 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 ho!
Yeah, and the kids are like, heidi, 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 ho! Yeah. Hody, 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 hey!
Yeah, that one.
Hey!
And that's... No, that's not the... Anyway, yeah, that's the song.
But that's what he does when he first shows up, and the kids are all super excited. Cab Calhoun! Cab Calloway! And he shows up, much to the children's excitement, and he sits down to talk with Bill. At first, he's like, are these kids yours? He's like, I don't have any kids, just some neighbor kids. I was showing them some steps. And he's like, oh, run now, you know, go back to your parents. Mm-hmm. I've got to talk with Cab. And they sit down and to talk, and Cab tells Bill to come perform with him at his show that he's got going on in Hollywood. And Bill agrees. The next number starts at Cab's club, mm-hmm. and he is in a zoot suit, singing and dancing with his band. To our listeners, if you, like me, had no idea what a zoot suit is, Google Jim Carrey The Mask. There is a picture of him in a bright yellow suit with a hat. That suit, with the big exaggerated shoulders, is, and the kind of long baggy getup, is a zoot suit.
And it's even in this, it was bright yellow.
Bright yellow in the poster.
Mm-hmm. And the outfit he wore, even though it's black and white, was a bright yellow zoot suit, exactly like the one from The Mask, so.
And I'd like to say, according to, it's a zoot suit, according to Kay, but really, Kay might be just trolling me. To show how little I actually know. I mean, Kay could have said that it was a plippity-ploppity-plop suit, and I'd have half to believe them anyways. Like, just, I wouldn't know. Anyway, zoot suit.
Oh, Lord.
After Cab is done, after Cab's number, Bill goes out and sits to watch his ex, Lena Selena, sing the title song, mm-hmm. in which I have learned is called the 11 o'clock number. I'm learning, Kay, I'm learning.
You are.
After Lena Selena's Stormy Weather song, we get the Stormy Weather ballet dance number, which it's nice, you know, no complaints. At least it's not, at least not until Kay told me that it wasn't a Broadway LSD scene, and it actually is part of the onstage performance that they're doing in an in-universe, for an in-universe audience. Oh, never mind. Kay lied to me, you guys. It was an LSD dream sequence. It's okay, Kay. You're allowed to make mistakes. This one time.
To be fair. With the way that the stage is set up and the way that they change their scenes and stuff, it very easily could have been a...
It was confusing. So that was the thing. Because I was confused, and then I asked you, but because it was confusing, you got confused.
Yes.
And so your answer was... So it was just a lot
of confusion. It was a ball of confusion. That's what the world is today.
Ball of confusion.
Yes.
Anyways, after this sort of not, but totally is a legit Broadway acid trip scene, Bill and Lena Selina reunite, but it's a short-lived... as Bill goes on stage to dance, and we get a treat of Bill's fancy feet and Lena Selina's angelic voice.
Mm-hmm.
Then Cab's Jim Jam Jumpin' Jive and the Nicholas Brothers' knee-shatteringly amazing, amazing dance number.
Yes!
Like, I remember, because it wasn't until we watched this that I realized that you had shown me just this one scene years prior.
Yeah.
Just... talking about how it's one of the most well-regarded dance numbers in just all of musical theater. These Nicholas Brothers, holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even explain how amazing they were. Like, the stage had these big, huge steps going on each side, and, like, there was a band onto the side, and they all had, like, little desks in front of them, and these brothers were jumping on these desks back and forth between musicians who were playing. And while they're playing. And what was funny about that, too, is you could see the look on some of the musicians' faces, like, if you kick me, I am gonna beat you with this horn. Like, and then the brothers, and they're doing... You've probably seen dance steps like this, but they would, like, jump high in the air, and they would land and do splits, and then, like, jump back up. But the way, I'm, like, watching the way that they would, like, jump off the stairs and, like, land, and I'm like, how do you not just slam your knee against the ground? Because they're catching themselves and lowering themselves, and I'm just, like, so much pain. I experienced so much pain just watching them. But it was so mind-blowingly impressive.
I would like to look for more of their stuff to show you now that we've seen them in this. Because this is, like, the top-tier dance number in anything. Top-tier. Like...
Oh, really? The final number?
Mm-hmm.
Because it really... It starts with... Cab's Zoot Suit number, and then it goes into Stormy Weather, and then from Stormy Weather it goes into the Stormy Weather Ballet, and then comes back to Cab with his Jump and Jive bit that does some scat, and then it goes into the Nicholas Brothers, and then after the Nicholas Brothers it kind of comes back to Cab, Bill, and Lena Selina kind of singing just a little bit and then closing out the show. So, like, the last number is just this whirlwind of different music styles, different tones, different choreography.
And ridiculous talent.
Yeah, like, it is so over the top. Like, it's one of those things, like, this last part, like, that is the way you close out a show. Because it was just... crank it up to 11 and blow the speakers out.
Yes,
like,
it is.
Was that kind of thing. And that's kind of how... I know I'm kind of... I'm saying that it ended abruptly, but it did end abruptly. Because after the Nicholas Brothers do their knee-shattering dances, and then it comes back to Cab. Thank you. Gabe, Cab, Cabe. What are names but noises we make? Like... Names are made up, Kay. Names are made up.
All right, Warren.
Anyway, when it comes back to Cab, Bill, and Lena Selina, and then I can't remember really the name of the song that they were singing, but I think it had something to do with love.
Yeah, it was. Let me pull up the discography real quick. So it was My Ain't That Something.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, like, There's No Two Ways About Love was the one that...
That Bill and Lena Selina were singing before it went into the knee-shattering dance.
Yes.
And then it comes back with...
Ain't That Something.
My Ain't That Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a medley, the way that they did it.
Yeah. Yeah. It just... It did... There was no clear ending. It just kind of bled from one performance into another and then back.
And, like, to give you an idea of how amazing the Nicholas Brothers thing was, Fred Astaire was like, this is the greatest movie musical number I've ever seen. And Fred Astaire was well known for his movie musical numbers. So
you and I are both having trouble
today. We are both having trouble today. I am so tired. I'm so tired.
But this show, I was genuinely impressed. Like, yeah. I didn't have low expectations, but I didn't have... I had middle expectations. I expected it to be along the same lines as Harlem in Heaven, like, have really good music and dance numbers with kind of subpar in between.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely better than Harlem is Heaven, because that was rough.
Yeah.
And this actually had money behind it.
Yes.
And it was just really well done. I mean, even if the story was kind of generic to an extent in terms of, you know, love, to, you know, typical love triangle stuff, you know, and...
They just handle it better than a lot of other Broadway musicals do.
They didn't have needless excess drama.
Yeah.
They didn't do, like, for example, what I absolutely hated in Singing in the Rain.
Oh my gosh.
Where the main guy in that basically emotionally destroys his love interest and then tries to walk it back.
Yeah. Like, it's like, no.
Yeah, there was none of that. There was none of that. There was a lot more of mutual respect among peers, even though they're disagreeing.
Yeah. And see, that's what I like about Stormy Weather over shows like Singing in the Rain, is that, like, sure, Singing in the Rain's a classic, whatever, but Stormy Weather is also a classic and handles the love interest stuff and the trials of having a relationship while being in show business and all of that a lot better than Singing in the Rain does. A lot better. And it's earlier than Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
What's
funny about that is I made that comment. I was telling you, like, how the the parallels between Stormy Weather and White Christmas.
Yes.
That it's one of those things that, even though I don't think the egos of some of the big names at the time would admit it, they had to have been inspired by Bojangles. Like, they had to have. Because he was so incredibly impressive. How could you not?
Exactly. Exactly.
But because of the time, of course, that, you know, the big white celebrity isn't going to say that they were impressed with the black actor, the black dancer, because... Why would they? Well, I'm better than he is.
Just
that kind of stupidity. But thank you, Kay, for showing me this, because I loved it. I liked it a lot. It was entertaining. It was enjoyable. I encourage people to go see it. If you have access to Amazon Prime, you can stream it on there.
Yep.
And for free. I mean,
it's not for free. I bought that one.
Oh.
Because I love that movie, I bought it so that we could watch it forever.
Never mind.
But you can stream it on Amazon Prime. I think that it might also be on YouTube, but I think you have to buy it through there as well. It's one of those movies that, because it's one of the more well-known ones, you're not really going to find free copies because it's still owned by somebody. It's not a public domain movie, or it's not a, you know... But I'm so glad that you liked it.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. So we'll see Lena Horne again in a couple of episodes, but...
Yeah, like...
Anyway. Like I said, this month has wiped me out. So I'm going to be pulling from my experience when I was student teaching. We're going to be doing a Kahoot quiz. I don't know if there's any way for me to actually get it to where it's a public Kahoot without paying a ridiculous amount of money, but at the very least, y'all can watch as Warren gets quizzed on the past month and what he remembers or doesn't remember.
Feel free to take bets now about... how well I'll do.
Yeah, you can, you know, message.
As I'm encouraging people to gamble on my musical theater knowledge.
You can send us a thing on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook and give us your best guess on how well you think Warren will do on this quiz.
Yeah, you can find links to all of those on our website, tonedeafmusical.com.
How's that for an ad pivot? You can also find our channel for the Cast Junkie Discord server, which is marked not safe for work.
Sorry, my fault.
You can also, if you want to go above and beyond, join our Patreon, which is Tone Deaf Musical. And there we have a brand new episode. Well, brand new as of this week, where...
Brand new bonus episode.
Yeah, brand new bonus episode where Warren gets to see me as Dorothy in Wizard of Oz.
Totally worth it. It was a lot of fun. We recorded that one with your mom.
Yeah, with Mama Kay.
I got to have a lot of awesome insight with both you and your mom about what that was like, what that mm-hmm. production was like and stuff. And just Kay, so freaking cute. Like, so freaking cute. Like, you were the cutest dang kid.
Thanks.
Like, just cutest kid, adorable teenager, beautiful woman. Just
thank you.
So cute.
Thank
loved
you.
It.
And Latte and Sophie are both on that episode as well. Mm-hmm. You'll hear Sophie yelling at us to wrap it up.
It's true.
So, thank you all again so much for listening. If you like this episode, please leave us a review on Podchaser or iTunes or wherever you can leave a review. If you also want to spread this to your friends, have more people subscribe so that mayhaps we might end up on a chart again. But that will be it. It is awesome when it happens. I love it. But that will be it for today. I'm Kay.
I'm Warren.
And this has been Tone Deaf.